folks. It's another episode of Eva Chikara for your ears, for your earbuds, your speakers, your iPhones, and your droids and devices. I'm Kevin Ford, one of the usual hosts of this show, and with me, as always, is my friend, my confidant, my life partner, Justin Houston. Justin, how are you?
I'm okay. I feel warm. I feel good about all those monikers that I've accrued. It's pretty awesome, and we're getting into the thick of it. The end of a Chikara season. We're here on Viva Chikara, and the good news is we have lots of awesome Chikara action to talk about. Like really, really good shows.
Yeah, the November shows for Chikara are really insane. Some of the best they've probably produced all year on paper. Just for those listening, just to give you an idea of our crazy recording schedule that Justin and I are going to be doing. Obviously, right here tonight, we're going to be running down the cards for Zelda the Great, which takes place in Chicago this Saturday, and A Piece of the Action, which takes place in Cleveland this Sunday. We're going to run down those cards in full and give you all the details. Next week will be another episode of Eva Chikara. Jerome Cusson is actually going to join us because he will be attending the Chicago show live and in person, so he'll give us his live perspective of the show, and I'm sure we'll talk some Cleveland results a little bit as well. But more importantly, we're going to be talking about the Wrestling is Fun show that's going to be coming up. I believe it's called Bananiversary. That's going to be happening on Saturday, November 17th. It's another free iPay-per-view provided from Wrestling is Fun and Smart Mark Video. And then that Sunday is the Cybernetico Rises, which already has Kevin Steen's crazy, amazing team. And then I'm assuming Kingston's going to have to release his team here soon, but we'll talk about those. The weekend after that's Thanksgiving. I believe all the podcasts here at Pro Wrestling Ponder are taking a week off. But never fear, because the week after that, we will have another Viva Chikara talking about the season finale show, Under the Hood, which will, fingers crossed, be an iPay-per-view taking place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So that's what you have to look forward to on the podcast schedule from us in the upcoming weeks. But for now, Justin, I think we should probably get into these shows, because there's a lot to talk about, a lot of good stuff to talk about.
Indeed, yeah. And I would say, again, both shows, November 10th, Saturday, November 10th in Chicago, Zelda the Great, and then Sunday, November 11th in Cleveland. That's a piece of the action. Both really strong shows. If I had to give an edge, I'd give it to this this first November 10th show.
Yes, again, that's Zelda the Great in Chicago. The first match listed here from bottom to top is sort of a rematch from the last time they were in the Logan Square Auditorium last summer. Last time they were there, they did Fist of Chuck Taylor and Johnny Gargano taking on the Colony of Soldier and Green Ant. This time around, it's going to be once again Taylor and Gargano representing Fist, but this time Soldier Ant is in the Swarm, and he's going to be teaming with Deviant. Last time, Fist were the one to get the win. It was actually their first win, or maybe it was their second win, on their quest to get 3 points, which eventually did lead them to the Campeones de Parejas, and I have a suspicion that they are going to win this match here as well. Just because Deviant and Soldier Ant don't nearly get along as well as Soldier Ant and Green Ant did then. And even they couldn't get past Taylor and Gargano. So I say an easy win for Fist here.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty blatant, especially since Soldier Ant and Deviant are still... Soldier Ant's still at odds, obviously, with the Swarm, still not liking them very much. What's left of the Swarm at this point? By the end of the weekend, I mean, who knows? There could be nothing left of these guys. So, I'd have to agree. This is not a whole lot to talk about in this match, but I would expect that it could lead to some to big things the next night. But yeah, Fist goes over for sure.
And this next match here, some more Ant action as the new colony, the Vavasorian colony, Fire Ant, Green Ant, and Assailant team up in a trios match against the Bravado Brothers, and making his return to Chikara for the first time since the 2005 Tag World Grand Prix, oh, so many years ago, Jimmy Jacobs. Now, Jacobs and the Bravados have also been picked by Kevin Steen to be a part of his Cybernetico team, along with the Young Bucks and the Briscoe Brothers. So this is a chance for some of Steen's teammates to get along, see how they work as a unit, and they're going to go against some of Chikara's best in Fire Ant and Green Ant. Now, Assailant's pretty new. He really likes being a part of the colony. He likes to do the ants marching dropkick and try to get the fans behind him, but the fans aren't feeling it, and certainly Fire Ant and Green Ant aren't feeling it. And I think with Jacobs and the Bravados having their home field advantage of Ring of Honor, and them being a more cohesive unit, which sounds weird since Green Ant and Fire Ant have been together for so long, but they just straight out don't like Assailant, and Jacobs and the Bravados are trying to work together. I think they're going to get the win here leading into the big Sabre-Monetico match. And it's good to see Jimmy Jacobs back in Chikara. I like it. I think that fits. I like him in there.
Yeah, I don't I don't really watch Ring of Honor anymore. I sort of pay attention to it, not really. I mean, this gives you sort of my level. I know that they're doing El Generico versus Kevin Steen in a ladder war coming up here. And the first thing I thought of was not, oh, man, that's amazing. I thought, I hope El Generico bled them dry of every penny willing to do that match because he is on another level than deserves. I mean, unless they're promising him the moon, I wouldn't agree to something crazy like this. I'm not thrilled with any part of Ring of Honor still. So I know people are already higher on the project, but you're nuts. I know you want to believe in Ring of Honor, but just let it go. In this case, I don't know how well Jacobs fits. I've heard some not so great things about the character that he portrays. And it sounds like they would have to sort of maybe dumb it down a little bit. In Chikara, I can't say for sure. I just know it's offended certain people, and we've had discussions about it here in the past. And he's been, from what I understand, he's been really, when people have called him out on it, he's been pretty good about explaining the character and going back and forth and stuff like that, which is great. But, you know, we'll see how it plays in Chikara. In the end, I figure Jacobs and the Bravados will probably get the win. And I don't know, some sort of movement here. The Colony finally getting rid of a Salant, or maybe the other way around. Maybe a Salant proves his worth, and maybe they warm to him a little of something. Something happens here, hopefully.
Yeah, first of all, I should apologize. I don't know why I threw in that home field comment. I think I was just talking, because that doesn't really make sense. Say the Ring of Honor guys have the home field advantage in this match, but whatever, I digress. The Jacobs thing. I think when we first talked about this was around when Jimmy Jacobs introduced his zombie princess character. I'm putting that in quotes because it's pretty much the same Jimmy Jacobs wearing this sort of like brown smock deal. It's a strange outfit to be sure, but and I think the criticism we got there is that when he first introduced this at Showdown the Sun in Miami, the fans used a very negative homophobic slur towards him. And I know our own Chris Gishuntong was worried that if that's the kind of response the character is going to get, it is Ring of Honor and Jacob's responsibility to sort of shift away from that, because after all, it is a business. It's a company. You don't want that sort of slanderous words to happen. And since that show, I've never heard it again. I was there for the Chicago Ridge show when Jimmy Jacobs wrestled, and I heard nothing. And I've seen pretty much every DVD, at least, that Ring of Honor has had since. And yeah, I've heard nothing of the sort. So I think that's pretty much a dead issue. So I don't think that's going to be a problem whatsoever. And his character isn't anything that's anti-family friendly or anything that's controversial. So I think it's going to be fine. You bring up interesting points with Generico and Steen in Ring of Honor. I know this is a whole different subject, but you had said something on the Magic Fun Hour when we were starting to preview the Unity weekend that I think holds true, was that I would much rather see Ring of Honor try to take a much more interesting and fresh approach to what they have than give us bad new stuff, and then when that doesn't work, resort to the old stuff that worked. Because, and you had said this too, you were fine with them closing the book on the Steen and Generico feud. You had accepted that Generico was no longer going to be in Ring of Honor, and you wanted them to see what they're going to produce, not bring him back just when they need him because they need a few extra dollars in their coffers. And I couldn't agree more with that. But if that's what the Ring of Honor fans want to see, and they're going to pay money to see the IP review, then what the hell do I know?
It's like the old ECW fans. They never wanted to see something new. They just wanted to see trot out Sandman and remind him of where he is and what he's doing, put a cane in his hand. And they just want to see that thing that they liked originally. So it's as much an issue with the fan base as it is just bad leadership at the top. It really is.
Right. And you know, I was totally content with the Generico and Steen feud being over. They did the fight without honor, which is traditionally the ending of a Ring of Honor feud. And then when Steen got reinstated, Generico ran out and Steen immediately took him out. And then he was wheeled out, presumably to never be seen again. And I said, awesome. I'm happy with that being the end of that feud. And then they just brought it back. But that's completely it. I'm gonna save the show, Justin. You know how I'm gonna do that? I'm gonna do this sweet segue. Speaking of El Generico, He is going to be in a singles match on this show as he takes on the Shard, who I believe is being called the something of the Gekido. I can't remember, like the enforcer of the Gekido, which is, yeah, it shows how great of an enforcer he is if Quackenbush was able to take out 17 and combatant. You and I have always said, though, that the Shard, I think, is easily the best member of the Gekido. You know what I noticed, and I didn't really notice it until I was thinking about it? But I believe this is the fourth singles match that the Shard has had in Chikara, and all the other three he had before that were with members of the second class of the Wrestle Factory. Actually, that's not true, because he faced the Mysterious and Handsome Stranger in a match, but he faced Jigsaw, Kingston, Nakuma in singles matches, which are all second-generation guys. So,
but he also faced Sugar Dungerton, like, twice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right, because he did on that Redding show or something. Okay, well...
Yeah.
Well, then forget everything I just said about the second class thing.
But recently the opponent, not I don't say quality opponent, but you're right, the familiarity and with the product and the you know, these are guys that are really close to Chikara's history. He's faced more high profile opponents.
Sure. So his highest profile opponents have all been from the second class. So maybe there's something there. Maybe he well, obviously, you know, him and Jigsaw have some sort of history together, so I'm hoping that isn't something that's just going to kind of go away. I think I was really impressed with his what he did with Akuma on the Piedmont, Alabama show. I really liked it. And that was probably my favorite match on the show. It was at least tied with the main event of Green and Touchdown. I know you said your father who attended the show, that was his favorite match. And I liked what he did with Kingston. And, you know, Generico is pretty damn amazing. So I expect this to be a very good match. It'd be pretty huge if the Shard were able to beat Generico, but I mean, it was a pretty big win for him to defeat Akuma. I think for the sake of the Shard and what would be good for Chikara, I'd say the Shard should win. Maybe he will. You know what? I'm going to say the Shard wins.
I think the Shard is going to have another good show. I mean, he's facing El Generico. And he's a smaller guy, which means El Generico can move him around a little bit. But he's also strong, which helps. That's just like that perfect foil for Generico, who can't. I mean, he just doesn't have bad matches anymore.
Did he ever?
He's now upped his resume has a great match with anyone in the United States to has a great match with anyone in the world. Because this guy goes to, you know, Russia and Budapest and England and in Japan. And, you know, Canada, Mexico, in the States. He goes everywhere and always has the best matches on the show, the most interesting matches. He is, in my estimation, the best wrestler on the planet right now. I really firmly 100% believe that. He is in that Bryan Danielson state where he so knows what works and when it works that he can have a match that faintly resembles every other match he has, and yet it's completely different with anyone. It's outstanding. I do not have any more respect for anyone anywhere than El Generico, and that's not just because that he is his own performer and he has made his own name, and he goes to what companies he wants to when he wants to go to them. He works every company because he is as big as the company itself at this point. That is incredible. On the indie scene, that is truly incredible, and I have just enormous amounts of respect for him. I think this is going to be an awesome match. I think he's going to beat the Shard. I wouldn't be surprised to see Generico perhaps shake his hand. I think that's a good segue from, you know, not earning the respect from a Chikara guy, which may be less believable, to earning the respect of someone who is within the family but not a member of the roster, doesn't have that core. Was not attacked. The core value of Chikara was, you know, he's not a part of that. So that part of him wasn't attacked by the Shard and by Gekido at large. So perhaps giving him respect in a strong contest would go a long way, maybe further than actually beating him. Because, you know, beating Generico, while that's a huge deal and makes him an indie wrestler, it doesn't change people's opinion of him. And I think that's as important as at this point is trying to change opinions and getting someone to step up other than maybe Jigsaw to stop Mike Quackenbush on his quest to murder all of Gekido.
Yeah, and we'll get to that with the next show too, with Quackenbush and the Gekido, because I think it might be leading somewhere interesting. Two things about this match: the moment I said I think the Shard's going to win, the first thing that hit my head was Cibernetico. There's a high chance I think that Generico ends up on Kingston's team for the Cibernetico. I mean, any company that gets a chance to put Generico and Steen across the ring from each other, they're going to do it. And Generico has a lot of history with Steen, obviously, and then other guys on the Ring of Honor team that I think that they could get him there. And the way that you could do that is if you recruit 3.0, you can get Generico along with them as a package deal, since 3.0 has a problem with the Vibratos, who are on Steen's team, and yada yada. So I think for the sake of Generico looking strong going to the Cibernetico, him pinning the Shard would be the best thing here. Although it is Generico, he doesn't necessarily need a win here to look strong. You call Generico the best wrestler in the world. Have you seen Kevin Steen's Smart Mark Shoot interview?
No, I haven't actually.
Okay, so it's great. You should watch it. Everybody should watch it. It's very entertaining. Mike Burns does the interview, the guy who's, you know, behind Smart Mark Video, and they do a word association at the end, and El Generico comes up and Steen flat out calls him. He goes, "I think he's the best wrestler in the world." And Mike Burns says, "I agree," which to me I think meant a great deal more. And I thought about it. I think of how many wrestlers Mike Burns sees from all the shows that he tapes, that he watches, that he edits and does all that work. To say that one person out of all the wrestlers he sees consistently on a monthly basis from all these different companies, to call them the best, that probably means a great deal. So if one of the guys who is running the top independent wrestling video website also says that he's the best wrestler in the world, that's pretty damn cool. And I think many fans and other promoters would agree with it as well. Yeah, so we're not saying anything new here, people. We're not breaking ground with telling you an El Generico is an amazing wrestler. So that's that. I get excited for pretty much any El Generico match these days. Because it's El Generico.
Same here. And that's why I very selfishly want him in Dragon Gate as much as he can, because I think that's so naturally. I think he fits so well there. DDT. I mean, that makes a hell of a lot of sense, and his relationship with Kota Ibushi is something that obviously in their matches and their intensity, and that's something that's bled into Chikara. I'm not really leaving the Chikara realm when I'm talking about that relationship and him. Currently being DDT's champion, he's going to be going back over and defending his belt for the I think the second time in at the end of November. He's the face of a lot of companies right now, and I think that as much as I want to see him in Dragon Gate, there's something very cool about where he is right now, being able to from this end, it looks like he calls his own shots. Maybe it just works out that these are the dates that are open, these are the dates that he can work, and he's just working everybody. I just think that's very cool, because, I mean, who doesn't want El Generico on their show?
Yeah, man. I mean, you saw he got announced for the Dragon Gate UK shows.
I did see that, and again, that just makes even more excited for those shows, because those are always pretty wild shows.
Yeah, and it was great because I see, like, Dragon Gate UK, like, El Generico's coming in. I'm like, that's not quite there yet, but it's a step in the right direction. So, you know, it would be better than Scott Reed going over to Dragon Gate.
I have bad news.
I know.
We won't bring that up on this show.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, guys, telling Brad, I guess the first match he's in is in a Kurikan show. It's him and Cyber Kong versus Speed Muscle, and Brad was just like, ugh, that's going to suck. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
man.
There's that. But hey, maybe Cyber Kong won't be pinned in that match for once.
That's true. Yeah, Scott Reed can be the fall guy there. That's... I don't understand that at all, but whatever. Moving on to something that I think everyone agrees is going to be pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, so Chikara has a tendency sometimes to do four-corner elimination tag team matches where every fall counts for a point. So a team could presumably go from 0 points to getting 3 points in a single match. And the teams in this match have a ton of history, so I'll throw out all the teams and then we'll get to that stuff. First team is 3.0, Scott Parker and Shane Matthews, former Campeones de Parejas. You've got the throwbacks, Dasher Hatfield and Mr. Touchdown Mark Angelicetti. Angelicetti, the current Young Lions Cup champion, and Hatfield and Angelicetti just had a tag title match against the Young Bucks in July, and they lost. Then you've got Icarus and Sugar Dunkerton, two Fist members who really don't get along. Icarus does not really care for Dunkerton being in Fist. He wants him to cheat. He wants him to be more like them. And Dunkerton just kind of wants to do his own thing and make the best of a bad situation. And then, a first time teaming, the mysterious and handsome stranger teams with his feral pigeon, Sapphire, who, yes, will be wrestling. So there's a lot of history in this match. First thing that comes to mind, you have Dunkerton, a former throwback, stuck in Fist, looking across the ring from Dasher, his former partner, for the first time since Dunkerton has returned to Chikara. And then he's got Angelo Setti, who Dunkerton's not really down with his philosophy of what being a throwback is all about. Then you've got the mysterious and handsome stranger in this match, who you saw Veronica had his eye on him during the King of Trios weekend, and she will most likely be in the corner of the throwback, so there could be some more googly eyes of them made at each other. And Sapphire had spied on Angelo Setti and gave herself away when she accidentally relieved herself on Angelo Setti's shoulder. So there's that as well. And then you have, of course, 3.0 had their little tiff with Fist back in 2010 when Icarus said that they really couldn't be taken seriously given all that they had done, and they had their matches and things and whatnot. And Icarus saying anybody really can't be taken seriously is quite funny, if you ask me. But there's all the history there. Justin, do you have a call for which team you think walked out of this match with points in their back pocket?
First of all, I believe that I might be wrong here, but the throwbacks have 2 points, correct?
They do, yes. They defeated the Bravados, and then before that, they defeated Fist, I believe, in the Reading show.
Oh, yeah, the baseball town shows. Yeah, okay. All right, so no chance that happens. I would say, for some reason, I am leaning toward Icarus and Dunkerton here. I see them getting 2 points here.
I see where you're going with this.
And I'm sorry, say again?
I see where you're going with this.
You see where I'm going with this. Okay, I'm sure the fans that don't have access to this car website are going, huh? it will become apparent by the next show. But I think they get 2 points. I would say Shicker pinning Mr. Touchdown or Dasher. Pinning one of those seems likely. And Icarus pinning someone else through nefarious means seems likely. So the dichotomy showing up strongly, but still showing the interaction. I expect it to be comedy heavy. Why? Because birds wrestling.
Yeah. So a plastic bird.
You know, I'm not a rocket detective, but there it is. So I expect it to be a really fun match, but I'm going to say Icarus and Dunkerton come away with 2 points. And, I believe that their tag name should be Dunkerous.
Seeing you call yourself a rocket detective?
Rocket detective.
While looking at your Skype avatar at the same time made me laugh. Because you look like the least serious rocket detective of all time.
I'm the only rocket detective. So I set the bar.
For
all
now,
rocket detectives should look that good.
For now, you're the only rocket detective.
That's true. Shit.
Icarus and Dunkerton's not a bad choice, but I mean 3.0 or throwbacks I could easily see walking away with some points too. Stranger and Sapphire, I don't see that happening.
What? Now let's we can't leave this. Is it going to be the bird on his shoulder, or are we going to see a huge flipping bird costume?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be the bird on his shoulder. I mean, that's the roster page picture they have for Sapphire.
What now? But that's in the non-wrestling section. We don't know how Sapphire looks in the wrestling gear. I'm hoping we get some face paint of some kind, some sort of tights on.
Or maybe a smaller version of the Mysterious Handsome Stranger's mask and hat.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm always a proponent of tag partners having matching attire. Good Lord, I don't know. I truly don't know what to expect. Sometimes when you see these comedy matches, you can sort of put together some spots you might see. I don't know what's going to occur here, and that's exciting.
Most assuredly. So moving on through this card, we have a singles match, a first-time singles match, Gran Akuma against Tim Donst. Well, these guys have different goals, but they both involve them getting more pins. Donst has his grand plan of usurping Eddie Kingston for the grand championship and rebuilding professional wrestling in his image. Well, all Gran Akuma really wants to do is climb the ranks of Chikara to try to get to where he was before he left a couple years ago. You know, he used to be one of the most dangerous guys in Chikara. He was kicking ass and taking names. And then when he got kicked out of Fist and took a hiatus, he came back and he pretty much had to crawl from the bottom again. He's not quite there yet. He's been teaming with 3.0 most of the time, but in the singles matches, he's been having some. He's been having good fortunes for the most part, but it's not to the point yet where he's able to get these really big wins. And Donce is a pretty big. It's a pretty big opponent for him in terms of what he's been used to having. And I believe I looked back in the history, and I can't remember the exact matches off the top of my head, but I believe Akuma and Donst have met in a trios match, an Atomicos, and a couple tags before, and I think they split the wins exactly down the middle, two for Akuma and two for Donst. So, in a way, this is a tiebreaker for them, and it's really tough to choose because they both really need a win. I guess I'd say out of the two of them, Donce getting a win over Akuma would mean much more.
I would agree with that as well. I don't get this Tim Donce character at all. I think it's a combination of a bunch of elements. It lacks focus. It really reminds me of the way that Jon Moxley was, that I never understood the character. I never understood the point. And these supposedly amazing promos are about nothing. I mean, they're just sort of like they're circling something that makes sense, but unto themselves, they really don't make sense. It's that Macbeth quote. I always go back to a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. It's just, it sounds like it's something important, but it really, when you look at it, it's nothing. It's really nothing to it. I think that they need to figure out what Don's goals are, but to go from, he's still worshiping Hollowicked for some reason. he's now turned his sights on the Kingston, turned his back on Jacob Hammermeyer. For what reason he wouldn't want him as an ally, who knows? It's just all erratic stuff that seems like it's big, but it's really, there's nothing to it. I would be much more interested in Gran Akuma versus Eddie Kingston having a really good title match, but destiny seems to be guiding Donce to Kingston, perhaps with that grand championship on the line, perhaps changing hands. If Donce can get a hold of a shoelace, then that's really what's going to do it. I can't tell you how much I like Tim Donce as a wrestler and as a performer, but I don't think he's given a whole lot of help to work with. Like the shoelace finish, terrible. That he worked for the longest time, and now this character, which is it's so poorly defined, it drives me crazy. I think Tim Donce wins, but I'd be much more interested. And I'm not the world's biggest Gran Akuma fan. I think he's gotten really, really good. I think he has a smorgasbord of finishers and great moves that he uses. And for some reason, he's decided to finish matches with some sort of weird Death Valley driver now, instead of the Rubik's Cube or the Yoshi Tonic or a Frog Splash or just a swift kick to the ass. I don't know.
The Tenchi Crash needs to be made a finisher again. He uses it, but it needs to be a finisher again.
Right. I don't understand. I mean, you could even use that. It's so weird that he's using. I don't know if you saw. You missed the Wrestling is Fun show, right?
Yes.
The pay-per-view.
Yeah, the Patassiker. Yeah, I missed that one.
Yeah, it was like an attitude adjuster where he sort of tried to grab a neck breaker at the end. Only it just sort of looked like a really long, lazy Death Valley driver, as opposed to, and we know he has a good Death Valley driver. He does that one where it's almost like
the rolling
like
one.
Fireman's carry roll. Yeah. It's like that version. We know he has a good one. So I don't know what the point of that is. But I'd still rather see Akuma win this, but Donce is going away a winner.
Yeah, I don't know. Part of me thinking ahead feels like Donce and Jacob go for their third point either at the Cibernetico or the season finale and break up. Then they do Jacob and Donst at WrestleCon, and then they do Donst and Kingston at Chikarosaurus Rex in 2013. So they could still do an Akuma Kingston title match if the Kingston's going to hold on the belt for that long. So don't give up hope yet, Justin. They could still do Akuma and him, and they had a good match at in the one Pottsville show they did in 2010, and then in 2005 as well, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
I need to say something though. Having fantasy booked this next season of Chikara, just being bored at work, they're getting like uncomfortably close to how I set up the season, and I do some crazy things in the season. So my excitement level to see where certain things go is pretty high, because it's basically exactly how I would have got it to where I get it. And where everything is much different than the way it looks now. But, this is a real, I don't know if it's a super telling match, but I think a loss here by Donst tells us that this is, it's going to be a long feud, not something they blow off just at the end of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see what the season finale has in store for us. Because the way I'm thinking of things, it might be a bigger, more of a setup to what's to come in 2013, more than a blow off to a lot of stuff in 2012.
Sure, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Which I'm cool with. That is not in any way a complaint. And there's a good chance I will be in attendance for that show. I do not know yet if I will definitely be able to, but hopefully.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, I'm a son of a bitch. I know. The Soul Touches. I love those guys. I've missed those guys. I've missed them very much. They were in Chikara last when they were in the Logan Square Auditorium last year. They defeated the BDK of Tursus, Donst, and Hammermeyer. Had a good feel-good victory in Chicago. And just kind of disappeared from Chikara. Where they went, I'm not sure. But they're back again in Chicago in the Logan Square Auditorium, taking on the Batiri, one of the upper Rudo trios in Chikara, a team that the Soul Touches have never faced in any iteration in their Chikara run. And so the Soul Touches have the hometown advantage of being in Chicago. And the Batiri have not necessarily had the best streak of matches in terms of winning them since King of Trios. I'm trying to think if they've lost all of them. I think Ophidian, Oberyn, and Kodama were able to defeat Fist in Alabama. I think Frymir beat Cobalt too. I don't know. Well, they definitely won that match. So, yeah. I wasn't going anywhere with that. God. I just kind of want the Soul Touches to win to have a nice hometown Chicago victory. But obviously the Batiri winning is, again, like the best thing to do for Chikara's sake. So, I guess if Ophidian's there too, they can do some BS finish. So I'm just going to say the Batiri wins.
Yeah, the Batiri is definitely winning. Though the crowd will get their hometown win with the next match,
which is Mike Quackenbush and Cole Cabana, a rematch from Shoot a Crooked Arrow. That was a fun technical match. It had a nice blend of comedy and mat wrestling. Quackenbush won that one, and I think you're right, Justin. I think Cole Cabana wins this one.
That match is a hugely overlooked match by people. That wasn't just an exhibition. I hope no one watches that match and thinks that that was just guys exchanging hole for hole. That had my favorite story of any match that I've seen this year. I loved it. I really loved it, which was Quack trying to do his... Basically, Cabana embarrassed Quack for like 15 minutes. It was really good. And this Quack had this look on his face like he really was embarrassed. Like Cabana... Because Quack tried to do this, you know, his normal stuff that normally he just flips the guy around all over the mat, drags him around by his pinky. And here's Cabana, who not only knows what Quack's going to do before he does it, but is a lot bigger than him. And Cabana bullied him, and Quack had to resort to some pulling some tricks out of his hat, and had to resort to his own blend, the things that Cabana wouldn't know. That wouldn't have been taught and wouldn't have been taught by the same people and learned through. That's what it took to beat Cabana, is his own arsenal. And I think that was an awesome story. I really looked to compound on this. at this show to see where they go with that story, because they built such a nice story of no matter what Quack did, Cabana always had an answer. And it was always something simple, something subtle, and something that sometimes it was just strength. You know, Quack would do all these flips and Cabana would just lock on his own wrist and say, no, 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 and drop him right back down, and that it wouldn't work. Such a smart match. I'm really excited that it's in Cabana's backyard for the sequel. And I expect it to be even better this time around.
We forgot the best part of that whole story is what ended up getting Cabana pinned was the Chikara special.
I should have said that outright. That's what he beat him with. You know, he got the advantage with his own arsenal, but that's what it took for Mike Quackenbush to actually physically beat him is his own. That's what, you know, his own patented move. Mm-hmm. So Cabana's going to have an answer for that if he wants to, or have something to go to himself if he wants to beat him. And I expect more awesome stuff here.
Yeah, me too. Really, this is a really stacked card, and it just has awesomeness from top to bottom. And up at the very tippy top is a title match, a Campeones de Parejas defense. The Young Bucks defend the belts for their only the second time since winning them against Ultramanus Black and Hala Wicked. Obviously, the biggest story between these two teams is they were in the finals of the King of Trios tournament, but it was Mike Bennett on the Ring of Honor team who fell to Hala Wicked's Chikara special and not the Young Bucks. So although Manus and Hala Wicked technically have a win over them, neither Matt or Nick Jackson was involved in the fall. So they have that, which I think was obviously they knew they were going to do this match, and they purposefully had Bennett, the most hated man the whole tournament, lose in that fall, which I thought was also really brilliant stuff. It leads some credibility to the Bucks being able to go into this match and say, you may have beaten us, but you didn't beat us. And then you have two of the most beloved Chikara Generation 1 guys in here challenging the Bucks, the young, cocky upstarts. I don't know what that even means. But I think the Bucks are going to win. Point being said.
Yeah, you know, in that whole, I just mentioned, the whole funny thing is I mentioned that fantasy booking thing, and I actually had the Bucks. This was my final match of the year, was between these two, with the Envoy winning and going over. Just a quick note, I meant to say something about this. I was not blown away by the finals of King of Trios.
Really? Oh, man, I loved it.
I was not blown away at all. I thought parts of it were a mess. I thought clear story elements were missed. And the finish, you know, didn't interest me at all. And I realized that they missed a really great opportunity to tell an awesome story. And they told it the exact opposite way throughout the tournament, which is that Ultramantis is worried because, you know, for the first time that, you know, basically what happened was Ultramantis destroyed everyone in this tournament, every single person. In the end, it was Hala Wicked that got the pinfall. It should have been the other way around. It should have been that Hala Wicked is running through people. They're winning despite Ultramantis and his terrible luck in tournaments, in championships. And in the end, Ultramantis has to actually buck up and win one. Instead, Hala Wicked won Ultramantis' first championship for him. Which I know it's not exactly the way it occurred, but it took away the moment for me a little bit. And, oh, yeah, and there was a lot of just Team Ring of Honor beating the snot out of Frightmare and then at parts the other two as well. I honestly was tired at the time, so it's not the whole match's fault, but I fell asleep for a second during the beatdown.
Wow.
I thought it was still – there was a lot of really good stuff in it, lots of good kickouts and – some stuff I thought was overblown. I still enjoyed the match, but it's not this. It wasn't this mind blowing. It didn't do it for me.
See, and I thought it did because one of the things that I really liked was the way both teams got to the finals too. The first night, Bennett, who everybody hates, pins Ming, who everybody loves. Next night, they go through the ECW team. Then earlier in the show, they go through the Sendai Girls. And in the first time they're facing a full blown Chikara team, they can't get the job done. And conversely, the Envoy had to go through a team they were unprepared for. the Batiri, who they were able to get, to be able to put down their biggest rivals. But then afterwards, Freidmeier had to get his knee destroyed. Then they were able to fight through that and beat Fist, one of their other big rivals, in the semis. And then were able to put away the Campeonatos de Parejas and the most hated man of the tournament in the finals. And obviously, Freidmeier got to work through his knee problems. So I really that aspect of it. And the Batiri running in and trying to get them taken care of.
Yeah, and, you know, the hated man thing. I mean, I thought, you know, I heard Mike Bennett really look good in these. I thought he showed up. He was definitely in the ring when things occurred. I don't think he slowed down action. I certainly think he didn't bring anything to the table. I mean, I don't think he was – I think he could have been replaced by 10 other guys on the Ring of Honor roster, and it would have made a bigger impact than him. I thought the value was having Maria around for certain things, which I thought she was more valuable than he was. I don't think he was – it was sort of like with the Young Bucks, it was like a s'more that someone made that was chocolate, marshmallow, and white bread, where it's like, okay, yeah, sure, it's not bad, but can we at least get something in here with a little bit of the, you know, a little bit of something unique, something, you know, anything. I didn't think he was that. He didn't screw anything up, but I didn't think he added anything to the contest that wouldn't have been there without him. I think there would have been tons of heat if you replaced him with a lot of different guys on the Ring of Honor roster. I don't think it needed to be Mike Bennett. I mean, again, he didn't do a bad job. I just don't understand what the big freaking deal about this tournament is. So we didn't completely blow it. You know, that's our barometer. That's what we expect out of this kind of thing. Then, of course, we're going to be blown away.
Well, honestly, I think it was the fans still like the Young Bucks because they do have their flashy offense. And obviously, Jakar guys are more willing to boo him. Boo them, that is. But Mike Bennett really, like, to me, Mike Bennett represents the Ring of Honor that nobody likes. If it was somebody like Michael Elgin, or if it was somebody like Mike Mondo or QT Marshall, or somebody that just kind of sucks, that's people that people want to boo, but boo in a bad way. I think people are more willing to put it with Mike Bennett as being the face of the Jim Cornette Ring of Honor because he's not like atrocious, but also him and Maria are a good package heel deal. And I think they sealed this huge Ring of Honor heel trio, which I don't think any other person would have done as well as he had. And that's not to say that he was amazing in the matches or anything else, but I do think him and Rhea were added to a good dynamic of what the Bucks brought to the table.
Charlie Haas.
See, but I don't want to see him and wrestle ever. Like, I hate Charlie Haas, and I hate Shelton Benjamin.
I think in that environment where it's his intentional, his blandness, I really feel like in that environment, if you're told be blander, becomes almost frustratingly comedic.
Perhaps.
That's just off the top of my head. I mean, that's just off.
Well, the other problem is part of Charlie Hush's character is yelling swear words at the crowd.
I mean, he doesn't have to. I mean, it's not necessary.
But that's all his character is to me is him yelling fuck you to the fans. And I literally mean he just yells that.
Adam Cole can get heat like a mother.
Okay, well, here's the other problem, is Ring of Honor had their eye pay-per-view that weekend, so it was who are they okay with not having on their show?
Right, which is ironic, because he's the face of, or the person that people hate most.
Exactly,
Ring of Honor. He was the guy they were like, man, we can do without him.
Right, exactly. So there's know. That, too. Anyways, I'm sorry you didn't like it as much as we did. I still loved it. You're obviously entitled to your opinion. I'm not going to totally fight you for this, because that's just dumb and a waste of time. But,
I agree that I'm one of those people that agree that every person is entitled to an opinion, but not a person is not entitled to have their opinion respected. So you in no way have to respect that opinion, but I haven't heard it. I'm certainly the first person that I had this thought, and I didn't see anyone else sharing that sentiment. So
it could have probably been also just way too built up in your head.
It really, you guys did a number.
I mean, I gave that match I gave that match the best blowjob of its life. And
right, there was some 4 billion.
Right, and you may have watched it and been like, maybe an okay hand job, but I don't know.
I think Jason was going around harassing people for not giving it high enough ratings, was he not?
I think he harassed me for not giving it high enough ratings, and I gave it 4.25.
I know, so I was like, man, this must be something really, so maybe it was just a question of, of just expecting more than it was. But I mean, it was still, I still had fun watching it. I just would have done things way differently.
Admittedly, Jason and I were both there live in person too, and that was like the building was literally shaking. It was an emotional, incredible atmosphere at the end of that match, and I think that carried over to my DVD watching, and I kind of just remember that feeling, and so there's all that too. So,
oh yeah,
different perspectives.
You can't help that. Yeah, you definitely. You know, there's no escaping that. But I mean, the good news is that this card with this match with the Envoy and the Bucks, which I do expect the Bucks to retain here, is that overall this card is just is it has me as excited as the King of Trios cards did. To be quite honest, this one I think is the strongest card or one of the strongest cards they put out this year.
100% agree. It might be the strongest card they've put out this year.
Yeah, I'm. I mean, there's. I have trouble thinking of anything else. But moving on to Cleveland.
Moving on to Cleveland, and Justin, this is where you take over.
Yes, a piece of the action, just a piece of that action is. It should be enough for you because I get no pieces of this action. It doesn't come my way, and when it does, I decide to plan exotic vacations over it because I'm stupid. Which, by the way, that vacation was amazing. So we've got it. The return to Cleveland, and of course, the first match we have listed here is the guy from Cleveland, and he, as he's known everywhere in the world, that's Johnny Gargano teaming up with Chuck Taylor. They've teamed in some places. They fight each other in others. They're going to be taking on two people that they're moderately familiar with. They're fist brethren in Icarus, the oldest fist, and Sugar Dunkerton, the somewhat new fist. They will be teaming together. Obviously, I think there's going to be some shenanigans here because I believe Dunkerton and Icarus are going to be walking in here with 2 points, and Taylor and Gargano, easily the stronger, more structured team, is going to be walking in with 1. So what do you do in that regard? We're going to get a match. We're going to get some finger pokes of doom here. Kevin, what? Explain. Fist finger pokes.
Yeah, fist finger pokes. That sounds like something I'd like to try in the bedroom, to be honest with you.
Jesus.
That was inappropriate. I'm sorry. Well, Icarus put out a bliggity blog today basically saying, Dunkerton, I want to teach you to act like a real member of Fist, and Johnny and Chuck, don't go easy on him. So I think, again, you have an instance here of a team that works together versus a far more cohesive unit. And I think, and you bring up a good point, if Dunkerton and Icarus go into this with 2 points and Taylor and Icarus pin Dunkerton and stop them from getting a 3rd point and they get their 2nd point, Icarus going to be mad. That's going to lead to even more tension between those two. So that's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, I think in the end it's going to be Taylor and Gargano that walks away with the points, but that friction is Icarus has is maybe the biggest ego of anyone on the roster, I think him not laying down but losing 2 points in potential, they can come together and say. They have that ability to come together and say, look, if you lay down, we get the points. We get an automatic tag title shot and a chance to bring it to Fist. Whereas Taylor and Gargano might not, they're not liking this idea. But if you believe in the Fist as a group, the smart move is Dunkerton and Icarus. But I don't think Taylor and Gargano are going to see it that way. And I think they'll eventually walk away with their 2nd point.
Now, here's another question. If Taylor and Gargano walk away with their 2nd point, and we have 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty going for their 3rd point in the Cibernetico next week, would they do them versus the Young Bucks at the finale, or a Fist versus Bucks rematch at the finale?
My guess was that you might do some sort of 3-way as a way to lessen how much work Marty and 1-2-3 Kid would do. That's just a thought. I mean, they've never done one of those before. So, maybe that might be just a terrible, terrible idea. Or maybe they change it up. Maybe, maybe the heartthrobs will face someone else, and they'll slot Fist in there. So, which I think would be a pretty darn compelling matchup. But I don't know. I think that the better matchup is going to be the Bucks and Fist. But boy, 1-2-3 Kid Marty Jannetty versus the Bucks is really that'd be really interesting, and would certainly have my attention. So
I think that's pretty much guaranteed to happen at some point. So
I hope so, unless someone doesn't show up. Obviously,
it's the closest we'll ever get to the Rockers versus the Young Bucks. So they
got to
do it. I mean, if they don't do it, then I'll hate them forever. The Chikara, that is. I'm just kidding. I can't stay mad at you.
Outrageous.
Come back here. Give me a hug. Okay. Please move on with the card quickly.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So that's just the first contest. The second contest is two people that are fairly miserable right about now. We have Soldier Ant still stuck in the swarm. Still longing to be with his colony once again, to have a warm embrace. And then we have Jakob Hammermeyer, who is he's lost his BFF, and who knows, you know, Soldier is kind of on an island right now by himself, and maybe he could use a friend. And what better? Okay, I don't see that happening. But they are going to face each other in combat, and I give that advantage to Soldier Ant.
I don't know. Jacob got a big upset win over Jigsaw earlier this year. Him and Donst have 2 points. I kind of see Jacob going over here.
What would that lead to?
Well, it sort of builds Jacob as more of a standalone competitor, which I think is necessary if him and Donst are going to go Splitsville.
I still think that eventually, this is so dumb, but my fantasy booking of Jacob being taken under the mysterious and handsome stranger's wing and becoming a Hoss Hammermeyer is a distinct possibility.
If the mysterious and handsome stranger remains mysterious and handsome long enough to make that happen.
Well, why wouldn't he? Is he going somewhere? I mean, he's winning.
I have a feeling he may unmask sooner rather than later.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do. Oh. Let's just say this. Homecoming ballot at the season finale.
Yeah, that sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
And we'll leave that at that. All I know is that Soldier Ant is... I still think he's winning.
Fine, be that way. Yes, have your Hoss Hammermeyer, your Charlie Hoss Hammermeyer.
There you go, perfect. The most interesting wrestler in the world, Charlie Hoss Hammermeyer. The next match is fantastically interesting. It's one of those only in Jakara type dealies. It is the Spectral Envoy, who could be, you know, the reigning tag champions by this point. They'll be teaming with the Ant Who Is Fire and the Ant Who Is Green. And they'll be taking on Ophidian and the Batiri, collectively known as Ngama. So, it's tough to call whether it's the, you know, the Jakara faithful here or this to take the win. I have to go, though. I have to say the more cohesive unit, which is, I think they have the advantage.
Yeah, as do I. I think it would be kind of silly for them to lose, to be honest with you. I think they put down... I was going to say one of the Ants, but maybe they do put down one of the Envoy Dudeers and make that a big deal. Maybe not. They might be saving a full confrontation, Batiri, Ophidian, potentially Delirious, against Envoy match for the finale.
That would make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, it's just obviously not that here needs to look strong.
And
stronger
have a name.
Than the other team does. Well, they have a name. I've said it over and over again.
You are a fool.
You obviously weren't listening.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm preoccupied.
Moving on to a singles match that we've seen before, but not for a very long time. The last time we saw it was awesome. It is Dasher Hatfield facing Tim Donst. And the last time that we saw it, I think the last time we saw this, there was a Young Lions Cup on the line, correct?
That is correct.
In an awesome match that included fan support and just two people that were very sweaty and tired by the end. But probably Tim Donst's best match as Young Lions Cup champion during his greatest Young Lions Cup championship reign. His match with Dasher Hatfield, just tremendous, tremendous, really kind of a star-making contest. I mean, I don't want to say star-making, but that was that match where you just, there was no going back for Hatfield. I mean, this character was solidified, a fantastic start to finish. I expect more of the same here. They're both, back then they were good, now they're even better. Like, you calculate how much better they are. You can, it's you know, it's that obvious. And I think I expect this to be Dom's second win of the weekend. How about you?
So do I. Yeah, it's almost remarkable how far Dasher has come. When he was creator wrestler, boy was he terrible. And now he's pretty damn good. And Donst has come a long way as well in both his character and his in-ring work. And obviously, Donst is in Cleveland, and he is the current AIW champion. So he's going to be in front of a crowd that's going to be behind him. And actually, the fans like to chant Tim fucking Donst there. So maybe they'll have to edit themselves to Tim freaking Donster. Not chance that at all. But there's a lot of Donsteroos in Cleveland. So it could be a nice dynamic in the crowd for this match.
I certainly hope so, and I mean, I hope that this gets the big match, because I think this is a huge match for them. This is those are two guys that put it all on the line in the previous contest. They're embroiled in very different paths right now, but certainly I think they're going to have another great match here as well. So that's a singles contest with a lot of history. Now we move on to a tag match. With a lot of heat, a lot of hatred, at least on one side of the coin at this point. Mike Quackenbush has made it very clear that he is no longer the face of Chikara. He has declared this outright. He has pointed at Eddie Kingston and says, "That is the man with the championship. I no longer have to be your smiling, milk-drinking superhero. I can be whatever I want to be." You know, he can do whatever he wants to do. He doesn't have to be that guy. He doesn't feel the constraints anymore. He's tired of groups coming in and trying to harm product that he has worked so hard to foster and train students for and really build the brand up. With the Kings Wrestling and the BDK and Sweet and Sour Incorporated and now the Gekido, and he's doing something about it. He has been murdering Gekido members. 17, he caught him in a dark alleyway and stabbed him to death.
Fact.
Combatant, he didn't even bother, doing this behind closed doors to Combatant. He upped his game. He broke Combatant. He literally spun his head all the way around in the ring. With Combat Ant, and
that was crazy.
Killed him on the spot. Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. I hope I never see it. I vomited immediately while the crowd chanted for more. And so he is after the Shard and Deviant. He is going to create a human centipede out of the rest of Gekido. And interestingly enough, it is Jigsaw, the man who he'll be tagging with. He is tagging with Jigsaw, as Quack and Saw, a tag team that is. Been in DGUSA, been in Ring of Honor, had outstanding matches, outstanding chemistry. They're like brothers. They'll be going up against the Shard and Deviant, and Jigsaw has been very clear. He is tired of Mike Quackenbush resorting to this kind of thing. He believes that they are above it. He believes that that lowering themselves to the level of the Gekido does more damage to the Chikara brand than what Gekido is doing. And it gives Gekido what they want, which is showing the dark side, showing the dark underbelly of Chikara, which we sort of didn't believe existed. But here's Mike Quackenbush literally murdering people with his bare hands. So Gekido is down to three. Shard is the de facto leader on the count of 17, was left bleeding in an alley. And he'll be teamed with Deviant, who made a plea on the blogs that, you know, he believes they've earned their way into this company, that they have they've made in this company, that they've that they deserve to be on the roster. And Mike Quackenbush believes that they don't even deserve to live. So we're going to get some intense. I mean, listen, if you want intensity, you're going to get it, because Mike Quackenbush is going to come. He's going to come with a bag of tricks and is going to try to kill human beings on this card. It's going to be pretty sweet. I truly can't wait. And I don't know. I mean, part of me expects Shard and Deviant to win out of pity or out of something crazy. But yeah, I'm going to say Shard and Deviant win somehow. What do you think?
I mean, they could also win by DQ, like 17 and
yeah.
I mean,
what if someone gets their arm lopped off, like, or like broken and like choked to death with it?
Well, I wonder if somebody like Jigsaw reads Deviant's blog and he says, you know, this guy's got a point, because Deviant points out, like, I wasn't the one who broke your wrist, Quackenbush. I'm not the one who retired Dragonfly again. I'm not the one who ended Tien Long's career in a match. That was all 17. He's gone. We've sort of dropped his image of what he wants to do for Chikara. We feel like that we've done enough to earn spots on the roster. We're done trying to take down Chikara. Now we're willing to play along. Please don't kill us. And obviously Quackenbush is probably like, no, that's not how it works. You guys still suck, and I'm going to kill you. But what if Quackenbush tries to injure Deviant or the Shard, and Jigsaw stops him and says, I'm not going to let you do this to these guys. Enough is enough. Again, you've cost us a chance to go for points for the titles. I'm sick of this. Maybe Super Kicks Quackenbush. Maybe he's like, I'm done with you. I'm sick of your chicanery and nonsense and tomfoolery. And we get to see the end of Quackenjigsaw Smash Driver. I don't know. I don't know. But this is certainly one of the matches I'm most interested in from a storyline perspective on the card.
Yeah, I mean, it has the most immediate impact. I think it's going to be pretty crazy. It'll be interesting to see how those fans react, because I do feel that as good as the storyline has gotten, and it took a long time to get, I still, as soon as I see the Shard, I'm like, ugh, more Gekido stuff, and I have to stop and go, oh, wait, he's had really good matches. Like, I have to stop and remind myself that despite being slave to other performers' moves, which they need to stop doing.
I feel like he did in the Akuma match. Like, he certainly did.
Really?
Like,
good.
I mean, he did a gory stretch and like a super kick. But like, I don't think he went for. Oh no, I think he did. Maybe he did use Jigen Tonic. I feel like there was a Yoshi Tonic Jigen Tonic, like, where they fought for that, and one of them hit it. I can't remember which one did. So maybe I'm just a liar and thought better of it. I think he's adding more moves to the repertoire, so it doesn't seem so blatant. But still, I guess they are there.
Yeah, and I hope they need to get rid of it. If these guys are full-fledged characters and not supposed to be, you know, just jokes, then they need to fix that. Or maybe I think Quack is going to get a hold of at least one of them. And I think he's going to do it looking into Jigsaw's eyes. You know, I think he's going to break Deviant's arm or something, or I don't know, something. I maybe the Shard, I don't know. It's hard to say for sure which one I think is going to be taken. I think at least one of them is going to be taken out, but who knows? Maybe Quackenbush goes to do it, and Jigsaw says, "You do it, and I'm leaving." And he goes to lock on a submission, and Jigsaw says, "Fine," leaves, and Quack gets caught from behind and gets the crap beat out of him by Gekido, and you know, learns what it costs him. So. There's a lot of ways to go here. I'm excited to see what they choose. One thing's for certain, I am really digging this version of Quack. And if we're getting this version of Quack, and if there's a Quack Jigsaw breakup, I would not. I mean, I wouldn't. It wouldn't bother me any. It would put two guys on the paths I think they should be walking anyway.
Yeah, me too. I would not mind that team to be split. They have plenty of other great teams and stuff in Chikara to be doing. Who to be in the title scene and doing all that other stuff, and Quack and Jigsaw can be doing plenty of other interesting things. At the same time, if Quackenbush loses to Cabana, the night before, he is going to probably be a little sour about that.
Yeah, I would expect so as well. So he might even come in grumpy.
You might see at the end of the match, Cabana goes for a handshake and Quackenbush doesn't give it to him or something like that.
It's certainly possible, especially if he gets the better of him or pins him in sort of or makes him tap or something like that. Maybe Quack's just not having it. I don't know. There's definitely ways to go. That's for certain. But which Quackenbush shows up is very, very, very interesting. And I've been saying for a long time, I want this Quackenbush that's bad Quack, as it were, could really change this company and take this company into a whole nother level. I think take a lot of indie companies on a whole level, because a Quack touring, we get to boo the guy and he's still, and I don't know. I think there's a ton of value there. And I think he's such a good heel. I go back and when I watch that High Noon match, I am blown away by how amazing he is. You sort of forget because Quackenbush, because he has his, he has his hands in a lot of pies, that he is, he's still a fantastic wrestler, but he's one that has become, I don't want to say complacent, but you sort of take it for granted that he's a really, really good performer. But with that heel persona, with that attitude, when you see that, you can't help but remind yourself how amazing he really is.
Yep, he's awesome.
Yeah, that's just, and I'm hoping to see more of it. But so we, there was a title match on the Chicago show, so it's only fair that Cleveland gets themselves a match for some gold. This time it is for the Young Lions Cup, which Shikara is now and officially running defenses of again after a year. Mr. Touchdown, Mark Angelosetti, successfully defended against Green Ant in their Southern Tour, in what I'm told is a real good match that my father enjoyed seeing live. He will defend it against Saturine in a very different contest, a very unique, only in Chikara style contest that you're seeing here. Saturine a chance to take home some Young Lions Cup, to take home some gold. This young and this early in her career, it's pretty staggering. But she'd have to go through Mr. Touchdown to do it. I don't see that happening, but I really expect a good match here.
I hope so. Saturine desperately needs depth to her character, being the girl who can do some flying moves and sometimes very clumsily is not getting it done for me. I feel like she does the same stuff in all the matches, and all their matches are pretty much the same. I need something to her character, or I really need her to change up her repertoire before I'm going to be like, really? Saturine, yes, awesome.
As a champion or just as a performer?
As a performer.
Wow.
Like, what has she done to earn this shot? Like, she's like lost almost all of her matches in Chikara. Like, the one big victory I can think of was against Chuck Taylor in Wrestling is Fun, and that's it.
I really didn't think about what she'd done to earn the shot. I was just surprised. I guess I was just so surprised that they were doing it at all that it didn't really dawn on me. So is this more of a what has she done to earn, or are you not really a Saturine fan?
I'm not, I don't like hate Saturine or anything like that. Like, I'm not like, oh good, here's another Saturine match, but I would like her to change up what she's been doing, because it's been 10 months of the same stuff over and over again. I'm ready for her to become, instead of just a rookie who flies around, to something of substance. I'm ready for that.
I'm going to go completely in the opposite direction and say that I've been really impressed with Saturine and from the get-go. And I think she's already much farther than some other lauded Chikara wrestlers were when they came in. Green Ant comes to mind as a dude who you didn't know what the world was going on with that character when that started. I think that she is already – I think the problem is that you're not seeing any progression, because let's say a wrestler starts doing on a scale of 1 to 10 moves with a like 3 and 4 is difficulty. She is starting in a 5 and a 6. I mean, unless you consider some of these ranas that she's pulling off as not all that impressive, I would say, you know, there may be a repetition issue, but she does some pretty exciting stuff, and she puts her body on the line. I think she's pretty she's been pretty spectacular so far. I still temper expectations. I'm still like, you know, she's still a year one, but I don't know. I think a lot of other wrestlers have been in this position and haven't been nearly as interesting or shown nearly the promise that she has. I mean, she's still, there's a botch occasionally. She did a move that I had not seen her do before, and I'm hoping, because she seems like she's got some nice kicks. She needs to get a pair of kick pads or something, because I hate seeing a wrestler who does a nasty kick to someone, and with like a pair of boots, because it always just feels like, oh my God, you're just kicking them right in the face. That's not good. She did like this back axe kick to on the Whiff show that I was really impressed with. That one of those that like almost Del Rey style. She just throws these like really stiff, lazy kicks, and it kind of reminds me of Jack Evans. I don't know if you ever saw these kicks Jack Evans would do. They were never like the tight slappers. They were the ones where he just sort of thunk you on the head. And I always liked them for whatever reason, because it was so different than what other people would do. These were like these Jack Evans style kicks that I really liked. And that one kick where she like hits him straight in the face, I always love that, because I don't know why, but her just spinning and kicking a dude in the face just pleases me greatly. I don't know. I think she's done really well for herself. And I agree that there's definitely she belongs somewhere. She needs to find a place in the company, but that's not her responsibility at all. Her responsibility is to go out there and to get people excited. And if you told me a first year student would be pulling out springboard dragon ranas and Hurricane Ranas and stuff like that, I'd have told you were crazy, or it's just that it wouldn't happen. Kicking people in the face, I'm pretty impressed. Now that could, if it's the same thing, next year or so, then we're talking about someone who isn't continuing to develop. But just for 1 year, doing triple jump Hurricane Ranas and doing some cross bodies at the floor, I've enjoyed what she's put out. The only thing, she still does this thing that my dad pointed out, where she sort of hollers before every move.
Yeah, I was going to point out that. I was going to say, like, you have your points, and the repetition is definitely the biggest issue. And another issue is that her and Sarah DeRay were probably going to be a great team, and then Sarah obviously left for NXT Pastures. But the other things that she does that really annoy me are the hollering before every move, the begging the fans for a reaction when she sometimes doesn't get it. And then a lot of times she'll hit like an offensive move, and then she'll just kind of like stand around or like ponder to herself, like, what do I do next? Oh yeah, this.
Right.
And that, like, and that's like, come on, man. Like this,
like an actor looking for the mark.
Right.
Know, like,
right. Or she'll just like hit a kick and
I
like
know what you mean.
Like she'll kick in the corner and walk away and just be like, woo! And then like
you
turn
know,
around
so,
and walk
like I landed it. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Or
even just like kick and then like, all right, walk away. Like, all right, I did that. Come on, and then turn around and then run into like a kick from Ophidian or something.
Right,
just like,
right. There
is, I'm like, come on, man.
There's like a lack of competitiveness where you always don't think, like, and that bothers me about some wrestlers, whether you get the sense they're not really trying to win a match, but rather do goofy things or get the rest. You know, she really reminds me of, now you've said all that, and I went down a checklist, I was like, yep, Ricochet did all of those things.
Yes, totally.
In those early days, he was guilty of all of that.
Yep.
But the good news about him is that he got more and more experience, and he grew out of it, and has become now that Pac is off the indies, he's the best high flyer on the indies. So it's it can be fixed.
So what we're saying is send Saturine to Dragon Gate.
Right, right, exactly. Which really you could say that about anyone. Give them a tour of Dragon Gate, they're gonna come back faster and better.
Well, I don't know, Scott Reed. We'll see.
Something has to improve, right?
he's the test. I think more so than anybody, any of the guys that have ever been to Dragon Gate, Scott Reed's the test.
What happened to Cyber Gang? Did that work out?
Who's Cyber Gang?
He was from way back. He teamed with Cyber Kong. He was just a gigantic black dude.
Was that what's his name from? I think his name was Baby Slim in Wrestling Society X, like in PWG, I think too.
Yes, there it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I forgot he was ever in Dragon Gate. He disappeared completely, though.
He did. So it's not foolproof as that has.
Okay.
We've discovered. So Scott Reed, maybe
he's the test. We'll see.
Right.
Because people say you send anybody to Dragon Gate and they'll get better. And with Scott Reed, where it's like, let's see about that.
Right. Boy.
So, anyways. Okay. So Angelo said he's winning, right?
Yeah. I think we both agree. Angelo said he's winning.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not sure how good this match is going to be, but I'll put on my optimistic. I'll just be optimistic about this match.
All right, sounds good. And then we have the main event, of course. This wasn't even the main event, folks. So this
match I'm really optimistic about.
Right. You talk about guys, going over to Japan and getting a lot of experience. Everyone here has a very different experience in Japan. 3.0, their only time going over in Big Japan. You have the Young Bucks making their name in Dragon Gate, of course. Bravados in the Noah dojo for a long period of time studying. There is El Generico. I mean, he is DDT's champion. So, and then I don't know. Has Gran Akuma ever been to Japan?
I believe not.
If you told me that the one guy in this match who hadn't been to Japan was Gran Akuma, I'd have told you crazy.
Right?
But that seems to be the case. So, I can't think of him having been in Japan either. So he's the only one that hasn't had. But of course, you can see in his offense that he is very much Japanese influenced. And it's going to be a big 8-man tag. 3.0, Gran Akuma and El Generico, together known as 3.0 Olakuma. 3 El Gran Jagged Magic.
Bandit
They're
magic.
Facing the Young Bucks and the Bravado Brothers. That's not bad. We'll keep working on this.
A grand bandit magic. I like that.
There you go. Perfect. All right. And they're facing the Bucks and the Bravados. I don't know who's going to win here. I say the good guys to send everyone home with a smile.
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say. I'd like Generico to give one of the Bravados a top rope brainbuster, and then yay, everyone goes home happy.
I feel like, I don't know, there's going to be one pretentious person that's going to be there and go, they're like smiling, like, well, that was obvious. You're still smiling, you dick, you know? Like, come on.
Like, anytime I'm at, sometimes I imagine some people doing this when they're at home, but I also have people in indie crowds doing this, that one. Just the indie fan everybody hates who sits there with their arms crossed and with a sour look on their face as they watch all the matches. And just nothing you can do will satisfy them.
Ugh.
But I don't think that person exists in an El Generico
match.
I'm
going home satisfied. No, hopefully not. And if they do, they should be rightly thrown out. I think this is going to be off-the-wall fun. Again, the card on the whole, not as strong as Chicago's, which may be the strongest card of the year, but I think the top. I mean, that's really the top five matches are all have potential to be really, really either really good or really interesting. Specifically, the Quack, Quack and Saw Gakido thing might not be a good match, but it is definitely going to be one to watch and have some interesting moments in there because I mean, there's still. This is all leading next week to Cibernetico. I mean, that's really what it's leading to. We'll be getting to that then. It's going to be Team Steen, Kevin Steen, the current Ring of Honor champion, facing Team Kingston, Eddie Kingston, the He is the current grand champion. Steen has his team picked. Eddie's still got to pick his team. He's still getting his team together, and a lot of results, a lot of different outcomes could lead to some very, very interesting people selected here. And I can't wait for that show.
Oh, dude, duh. The babyface team is going to win and then get recruited by Kingston to join a Cibernetico team.
It's certainly possible. I
mean, that might be too far in the future. Like, they may want to have the teams announced, like, now. But I could see, like, Sunday night they do that, and then after the show they're like, oh, yeah, they're going to be on Kingston's team. Like, they announce it after the win.
If I'm being honest, the team that I had picked was – I didn't even realize it until you said that. Those are four of them. The other ones are Ultra Mantis and Hollow Wicked, and then the extra man's Jigsaw.
Yeah, Jigsaw or somebody else. I don't know. I never had Jigsaw in the equation, but I always had 3.0 Lay, Generico, and the Envoy, at least those two of the Envoy.
Right, right. I'm not sure how.
Wouldn't it be awesome? Right, I mean, I don't know if it'd be awesome, but, like, you know, I would never expect of, like, the Jacobs and the Briscoes to have been on the Steen team, but, like, I mean, hell, Kingston could be like, hey, okay, fine, you're bringing Jacobs, BJ Whitmer, come be on my team.
It's true. I mean, he could choose. You know, I mean, he's definitely. I mean, you go to Generico, you're choosing Steen's foil. He may try to choose the foil for each and every guy. I mean, if you're going to choose the foil, the people that face the most. The Young Bucks, go with Ultra Mantis and Hollow Wicked. That makes sense. 3.0 right there. That makes plenty of sense to face the Bravados. I don't know who you get for the Briscoes. And they had one match before, and it was against
Fist. So Akuma fits the bill.
Icarus and Gran Akuma.
Yeah, so Akuma fits that bill.
So right. So, you know, Gran Akuma getting in there. I guess that makes a degree of sense. I don't know how you sneak Generico and Jigsaw in there, but why the hell not? That's I don't know. But, yeah, I think it's certainly possible that he could go down the line and choose their nemesis.
We'll have to see, and we'll be back with another Viva Chikara next week to talk all about it.
Indeed. I got to say something else, though. I really thought that they were going to choose 3.0 instead of the Young Bucks on that squad, and because Kevin Steen was going to be all coy and say, well, they wrestled in Ring of Honor. And Kevin Steen was going to come back and say, well, they're our champions, and he was going to pick the Young Bucks. So I don't know why I thought that was coming, but I really did. But didn't happen. So we'll talk about what actually did happen, like you said, next week. But for now, we got these two awesome Midwest cards, November the 10th, November the 11th in Chicago and Cleveland, respectively. You're a fool if you're in this area and you're not going to – either one of these shows, or both, if you can make both. I don't know how far apart Chicago and Cleveland are. I guess at this point it depends on. You know what? I'm going to stay away from making Hurricane Sandy jokes. There's still a lot of people without homes. We're going to go ahead and backpedal on that move and just say these are awesome cards, and we hope you can make one or all of them.
Yes. And hey, you know, our own Jerome Cusson is going to be there. Adam Testa, a friend of our website, is going to be at the Chicago show as well. And Dr. Keith Lipinski is a good friend of myself and the website, and other people we know are going to be there. So we're not just blowing smoke, people. Even though Justin and I can't afford to make the trip, people from this site and friends of ours are. So we ain't just whistling Dixie, folks. You should get your butts to these shows.
Indeed.
So before we get out of here, Justin, you've got some stuff to plug, including something that you finally have come through for me, and I could not be more thankful.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'll plug that first. So I started I should first say that my work has left websites unblocked again because they did this whole desk move, and so I got an old new computer, and it's slow as balls, but nothing's blocked on it, so I was actually able to do picture captions again. Hooray! Again, in the case of Dragon Gate, which in the Tumblr for it's openthee.tumblr.com for all your Dragon Gate needs, and it's got everything you could want from DGUSA, standard Dragon Gate, Dragon Gate UK, DGUK, which is going to have some amazing shows coming up in the near future. Just awesome stuff. And then the picture captions, which whenever those come in, I'll be able to do those consistently. And of course, which Kevin will be plugging his Chikara Tumblr page, Chikara special Tumblr page, photo captions for them as well. Now that I have the ability, so to do it at work, so that's awesome. That was a lot of fun to do. Lots of silly, awesome photos that I can offend your eyeballs with. So, or tickle your funny bones, whichever. Depends on your prerogative. There's that. There's on my personal YouTube page, if you're interested in who I am and how I lead my what I call a life. It's Deep and Meaningless at YouTube. Twitter, Justin J. Houston, because it's my name. And I tweet all sorts of really offensive things, most recently about some racial issues in the NFL, because that's what I do. I'll probably post more of the same soon, because, boy, nothing gets my blood boiling as a white guy like racism against black people, let me tell you.
Wow. Just wow. I didn't know there was going to be a Mitt Romney speech at the end of this podcast.
Oh, that no, that was genuine. That was it genuinely drives me crazy because I want to be the guy that's like, because I live in the South, you know, and so I'd like to believe that there are other areas like that. It's only here where you can walk behind a conversation where someone says, "Look at that boy," and it's, you know, and you're like, "Oh my God, please don't ever, you know, have children." And then you like you see that it's still very much national. You're like, come on, really? I can't say that it's isolated to my region.
Oh, I thought that's you were saying that you hated black people. That's what I was getting.
Oh, no. It's just basically this black quarterback, Robert Griffin, has been having a really good season all throughout the year.
Yawn.
A white guy who is they're linked through a draft. Has one really good game, and then there's all this press that he's the most amazing quarterback, and it just blows my mind. It drives me crazy. I don't know.
I understand your frustration, but I'm not going to go into this deep and meaningful conversation.
No,
you see what
right,
I did there?
Right. Thank you. That was beautiful.
So yeah, chikarspecial.tumblr.com is my Chikar Tumblr where I post all the match information, YouTube videos, my reviews, anything related to Chikar that I can find officially and unofficially goes up on that Tumblr page, including what has become very popular that I noticed were photos for Chikar, especially the goofier ones. Those tend to get the most reblogs on the Tumblr community. And so when I saw Justin was doing photo captions for Dragon Gate, it took me a while to realize this, but I realized, well, duh, I can just have Justin do them for me as well. And so far, Justin, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's been really good. People have really liked the photos and have been reblogging and sharing them. So great job. I'm really glad to have you on board and see that you're doing them. And I'm impressed with your work so far.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm assuming the check's in the mail. I don't even need to ask, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. Chikarspecial.com is my review website, reviewing anything and everything I can with Chikara. I have the review of the Piedmont, Alabama show up now. Probably by the time you listen to this, my review of the Gibsonville, North Carolina show will be up as well, so you can check those out. And then I'll have the 2006 season finale shows up in a week or two. And then I also have on Twitter, at Chikar Special, you can follow both the Tumblr and my review site through there. And you can follow me personally on Twitter, at KFord13. And of course, please go to pwponderings.com, where this podcast is housed. Listen to all other podcasts, read our reviews, read all of our columns and opinion pieces and everything else that our website offers for you. And also be sure to follow us on Twitter at pwponderings. If you need live results for shows, we got you covered. Pretty much any IPV that airs, we have results for. Tons of live shows all across the country. We got you covered over at pwponderings on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to come back next week when Justin and I return with Jerome Cusan to talk Jerome's live thoughts from the Chicago show, Zelda the Great. And we will also preview the Cybernetico Rises and the Wrestling is Fun show the night before. So, Justin, thanks for joining me. Do you have anything else to say before we get out of here?
I do enjoy black people.
Thank you. I'm glad you made that known. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. We will see you in 7.
People.